Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 120. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent, and a relatively sad day for me as the Lakers did get eliminated last night at the hands of the Denver Nuggets in a sweep. Didn't really expect that to happen going into the series, but then again, I didn't necessarily pick a team to win because I thought it could go either way. But hey, the Nuggets are the better team, deeper, younger, been playing together longer, had the best player in the series, and a great co-star in Jamal Murray. So kudos to them. And then now you're hearing about LeBron possibly considering possible retirement, which I didn't really get a chance to talk about on this pod, as that happened early in the morning, I would say, that news broke. But I don't necessarily think, I don't see LeBron retiring, because I know that he wants to play with his son at least once when he should be eligible for the 2024 draft. So he's probably just going to see where he plays or where he'll end up at. And I would think LeBron would just put himself in position to be able to play with his son and go to whatever team drafts him. I just think this is probably a little this reaction to another loss. And, you know, LeBron's not at this point of his career looking to play for conference titles, but instead he wants to put himself in a position to win an NBA, another NBA title, his fifth. So I think that that's just a little overreaction to what happened. And then also to his one of his best friends, Carmelo Anthony, just recently announced his retirement. So I think that that played a factor into LeBron, like, you know, kind of questioning his own basketball mortality, which I'll talk about on this pod as well. Carmelo Anthony retiring. I did a live reaction to game 4 between the Nuggets and Lakers. I touched on that about an hour after the game. And I also did touch on preview game 4 between the Celtics and Heat, which takes place tonight, in which Boston too is on the verge of being swept. Also talked about the rumblings of, you know, whether or not Jaylen Brown's happy in his particular role, and being frustrated at being in numerous trade requests since, last year's finals appearance, and whether or not, questions of whether or not him and Jason Tatum are, an ideal pairing as a duo in the NBA based on their style of play. So I touched on that, and then also, again, I mentioned, touched on Carmelo Anthony, saluting him on his career, as he did announce his retirement from basketball after 19 seasons in the NBA. So we can actually get into this pod right now. So the Denver Nuggets are going to the NBA Finals, the first finals appearance in franchise history, after completing the sweep of the Los Angeles Lakers in a 113-111 victory. Also their first sweep ever in franchise history. Nikola Jokic was sensational tonight with 30 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists, or rather 13 assists. Another triple-double, and he actually did tonight pass Wilt for a record that has been held for about 55, 56 years, with the most triple-doubles in a single postseason with 8. He also is the first player now in conference history, conference finals history, to average 20, 10, and 10. This guy is just sensational. It's like every other game, he is making history and he's moving up in the all-time ranks right in front of our eyes. And it's really, like, I think it's really, really good to see now him getting the respect that he rightfully deserves, at least from the casual basketball fans. Because if you're not a casual basketball fan, you wouldn't really know just how good Nikola Jokic is or how good the Denver Nuggets are, as they were essentially the best team in the Western Conference ever since Christmas. And towards the end of the season, they kind of, like, you know, they took the foot off the gas and just kind of coasted. But they got back into form for the playoffs, and here they are now, 4 wins away from having their first championship in franchise history. As I mentioned, Nikola Jokic was great tonight. He did have to battle some adversity, get into having some and foul trouble get again for a consecutive game. And of course, Mike Malone was happy, picked up a foul, or rather a technical foul, I believe, and it was in the third quarter. Or I guess it could have been in the second quarter, in which he had gotten his technical. But they were very frustrated. You know, they felt like the calls weren't going their way, the Denver Nugget that is. But they were essentially committing, like, blatant fouls that the refs just couldn't just ignore. or ignore. And of course, if you're a Denver fan, that will probably frustrate you a lot. If you're a Lakers fan, you're gonna turn a blind eye to it. That's how it is. But they were able to fight back in the third quarter, winning the third quarter 30-16, plus 20. LeBron was sensational, essentially, in the first half, scoring 30 points. I believe it was 32 exactly in the first half. But I knew that our offensive productivity, rather, couldn't realistically be sustainable in the second half because we all know LeBron James is in year 20, 38, approaching 39 this year, playing on a bad foot, which most likely will require surgery in the offseason. That's a good review, and so that's a really a lot to ask of him to, duplicate that productivity in the second half, as it's going to wear down. And I think that was a pretty visible in the second half when he wasn't didn't have the same mindset, it felt like, that he had in the first half. But in the first half, he was essentially just getting down low, catching the ball on the block. He was making a move, and then he was reading the double team, and if it came, make the correct pass to kick out for an open shooter, or they can just pump fake, penetrate the lane, and go from there. But LeBron was just kind of like drifting in the corner. Then he was getting a little two-man game with Schroeder on top. So people say that, they criticize him for like taking his for not being as aggressive. But this is reality that kicks in when you are at this stage in your career. He's simply not the LeBron James that we've grown to know, basically for the last 19 years, essentially. He's in a different phase now in his career. And now we know that Anthony Davis is their primary offensive player. Like, he needs to be aggressive in order for them to realistically win, but he wasn't. And as a result, the Denver Nuggets are advancing. This is kind of crazy because while this is a sweep, this really is probably the closest sweep that I've ever seen, because all these games have essentially come down within the last couple of minutes, with the exception of game three. And even that wasn't really a blowout. Denver just got a comfortable lead, in which you knew that within the last 3 minutes that they were going to win, where this game could have went could have went either way, as it did come down to the final buzzer when LeBron trying to make a move, and then Jamal Murray came over it and made a great defensive play and then held the ball when LeBron was trying to go up for a shot, and then essentially which led to the game being over and Denver celebrate coming on the floor to celebrate and to embrace the players off the bench, coming to embrace him and Jokic, because and that was a great play by Jamal Murray because he was really he was really a non-factor from an offensive standpoint, at least in the fourth quarter, after having to after torching the Lakers virtually all series. He wasn't really that good, but Joker picked up the slack, essentially, making some big ridiculous shots over LeBron and Anthony Davis. That one shot over Anthony Davis, that step back, basically putting the ball behind his head, one-legged, and hitting that three. It's just like, at that point, it's just kind of like demoralizing to a defense, even if player Anthony Davis's caliber, like what else can you really do? It was just at night, and he was in his own. Aaron Gordon played well tonight too, but definitely his best offensive output of the series so far. The Lakers were down in the shoe, and he hit I believe 3 or 5 from the field. Well, from three in particular, he did a pretty good job on defense as well too, just being active on the boards. Michael Porter Jr. Made his presence known as well. So yeah, I think that the Denver Nuggets certainly should be favored, whoever they play, which will most likely be the Miami Heat. They had the ingredients of a championship team. You got Arguably, who, well, I think right now would be the best player in the world, in Nikola Jokic, with a great sidekick, or running mate, as you want to call it, and Jamal Murray. Those two and the two-man game has been virtually unstoppable all playoffs, and I don't see that being solved by either team in the Eastern Conference, in the finals. So I would say that they are a strong favorite. Then of course they got the complementary pieces that fit around both of them, with the likes of KCP, Bruce Brown, Michael Porter Jr., Jeff Green, the savvy veteran that is. So they have all the ingredients to win it, to win. And what convinced me as well too was how they handled these two games in LA. Again, both games they could have easily mailed it in and just said on to the next one, and then just move on. But they actually stuck with it. They grit and grind. Like I said, there were some questionable calls that that would probably lead Denver fan that would lead a Nuggets fan frustrated, because it kind of felt like the officiating was leaning towards the Lakers, I would say, in both games. I'm not going to complain though, being a Lakers fan, but I'll keep it real. Definitely was some favoritism, I would say, with the officiating. But I mean, that tends to happen though when you're and in the playoffs, when you, especially when you're a home team as well. I think the whistle tends to blow in your favor, and that's what happened here. But Denver just stayed focused. They stayed true to the mission, and now here they are, hosting the Western Conference Finals trophy, and they're advancing. Whereas the Lakers now are faced with an offseason of questions. How can they improve this roster? I think as a Lakers fan, I can say that I can speak for all Lakers fans, because I'm sure they say the same sentiment as me, that D'Angelo Russell, he is not in our long-term future. He was virtually non-existent all series. I was a series off, because I felt that this would be the D'Angelo Russell we would see against the Warriors, and which is why I had the Warriors winning that series in six. A big reason, because I felt like to beat the Warriors, you needed excellent, competent, efficient guard play to realistically have a chance to beat Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and the crew. But I was wrong. They won the series, and he was relatively good in that series. But this series here, he was just abysmal. Just wasn't really a threat on offense, making just careless passes. Was really like kind of unsure of himself and timid, like he didn't belong. It kind of felt, was what it felt like. And then of course there's him going back and forth with Bruce Brown. They weren't intimidated by him at all. They was kind of felt like they was getting to him. The Nuggets players as well. So I just felt like he was a little, I don't want to say he was scared or he was getting taken advantage of. But yeah, it was just bad series for him, a bad outing. Not really good, since you're in a contract year and you're looking to get paid next season. And also didn't help the fact that Kyrie was in attendance at the game, because a lot of people feel like Lakers will make a play for Kyrie Irving. I don't know how realistic that is, especially with their situation, what they have with Rui Hachimura and Austin Reaves, who are both restricted free agents. And especially Austin Reaves, he's played himself into a big payday, I would say, in these playoffs, because he was basically the Lakers' third best player throughout this whole run. So the Lakers are definitely going to try to match whatever offers come his way. But at the same time, I don't know if it's wise for them to overpay for him. Overpay for his services. He's good. I like him. I like what he brings to the table. He's very crafty. He's really good at drawing fouls this early in his career at that. And he does hit some timely big shots. But still, I think that we whatever we, they can't necessarily overpay for him. So I don't know how it's going to work. I see Wendy was talking on his podcast, The Hoop Collective, over the weekend, how they're going to try to do everything they can in their powers to keep Austin Reaves. They don't want a repeat of Carlos Caruso, sorry, Carlos rather, Alex Caruso walking out when he walked from all the way from the Lakers with nothing in return. They don't want a repeat of that. So I don't know how they can get Kyrie. Wendy also did mention that they can get Kyrie and probably give him a little bit under the max, but I don't know if Kyrie would do that. I'm not gonna say I know him personally, but I just find it hard to believe that a guy of that caliber, who knows his worth certainly, who has is one of the most talented offensive players we have in the game today, most skilled arguably as well too, is gonna like settle for anything less than a max. I can't see that happening with Kyrie. So that, and also through the Phoenix there's been rumblings of him reuniting with KD in Phoenix to pair up with him and Book. And I feel like that's more realistic than the Lakers. So I don't know what the Lakers can do, how they can improve this roster. I'm going to try to do some research for that as the weeks progress, and I'll talk about that more in this podcast. But again, kudos to the Denver Nuggets for reaching the conference finals, rather the NBA finals, their first in franchise history. Just a very special, special, special team. They are going to be really tough to beat. I don't know. I don't know if I see a potential dynasty looming, just because of their. I would say because they're not necessarily they're not really a great defensive team. Although they do make the effort, they have some very good individual defenders like KCP, Bruce Brown, Michael Porter has shown improvement in that department. this season. But again, the two star players, Joker and Murray, aren't necessarily known for their defensive prowess. So I don't know how realistic it could be for them to be a potential dynasty. But on offense, they just click on all cylinders. They have great perimeter shooting, great cutters in the basket, exceptional passing when it goes through Nikola Jokic, and just timely confidence and big clutch making shots on their team. That's very hard to find in today's NBA. And Joker is just so like he's like the trump card, where he can just do it all. It's like a one man show, and which is why I think it's fitting that he was awarded with the Western Conference Finals MVP. That award was just introduced last year when Steph Curry won it for the West. And now here we know, God, and now rather here we are with Nikola Jokic being awarded that honor, and I think it was fitting. I said to my mans on social media on Twitter. I replied to his tweet when he was saying that that if the Nuggets are to win the series, that Murray should be given that award. I'm saying to myself, you know what? I'm not mad at that. It can go either way. But I think that this game tonight, game four, that is going to determine who will get the award. And I think that is what played out today. Nikola Jokic was sensational, especially when it mattered most. Came up big, whereas Jamal Murray was essentially a no-show on offense in the fourth. But they was able to, win the game. So I think that is right, that the world went to Nikola Jokic. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting NBA Finals, especially if it's going to be against the Heat. Like I said before, only casual fans won't appreciate that Finals just because there's not like a big box office draw per se, not a lot of sexy names on the bill. But if you love basketball and you love basketball when it's played the right way with passing and great offensive sets, great shot making, defense, tenacity, effort, hustle, all those, you would want to tune into a Nuggets Heat finals. I know I would, and I just can't wait to see what transpires with that, because I think the Celtics are going to lose tomorrow, being down 3-0 in a series. No one's ever came back. And we know why, because it's when you get in a hole 3-0, that means that the team that's up is the better team. We've seen enough here. And the scary thing about the Nuggets too, with the Lakers beating them in four and sweeping them, I don't really think that they played a great game from beginning to end at all. I mean, they had that great first half in game one, but kind of like took the foot off the pedal, led a lot of Lakers to get back into the game in the fourth quarter when they made it a great game. But they didn't really play a great game from beginning to end at all. So I think that there's some more that we can see from Denver in the finals, which is kind of scary for the opposition, I would say. They're gonna have a tough task to deal with that group down there in Denver. And then, of course, if they do play Miami, they will have home court advantage. And we know how that altitude is in Denver plays a real factor down there. So that would be something to keep a lookout on. But yeah, so I'm gonna come back later and talk about the series between the Celtics and Heat. All right, so will the Boston Celtics be swept after tonight, or unlike the Lakers, will they be able to force a game five and make the series go back to Boston? I say no. I do think it is over tonight. As in, game three was pretty atrocious for Celtics and Celtic fans, as they did lose to the Heat 128 to 102, and this score doesn't really tell the whole story. It's pretty deceiving. It was annihilation throughout most of the game. The game is virtually decided by the end of the third quarter after the Celtics went down 30. I don't see how they can come back from a deficit like that on the road in a pivotal game three after already dropping the first two games at home, being the number two seed. In this case, I think it's over tonight. The Heat are just essentially a better team. They don't necessarily have better talent, which I don't think they do. Boston is better talent-wise, but from a unit base, They are the better team. They play together. The system's well put together, well constructed, and they just essentially hungrier and they want it more. I mean, that game was very, very alarming. Game three, especially with Tatum and Brown, two representative of all NBA teams this past season, in which they both went and combined 12 for 35 for 26 points in game three. Gabe Vincent, one of the undrafted players on the Heat, had 29 points alone himself, 6 of 9 from 3-point range in that game. Now I know a lot of people, I've seen it on Twitter, are complaining about the constant bringing up of the Heat's undrafted players as if it's a knock on them. But I don't think that it's a knock on them. I think it's a compliment. And the reason I say that is because that they're it. The fact that they weren't undrafted and they're able to contribute at a high level speaks to the work that they put in despite not being drafted, and speaks to the Heat culture that's established down there with player development. I don't think it's a knock at all. I think it's amazing. It's a great story. It's part of their story, that basketball journey, that they weren't able to get selected at first in their respective drafts, but they're able to find their way into the league and contribute at a high level because they are vastly outplaying the Celtics role players in the series, the likes of Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin, Strus Robinson. They're doing their thing, and just it was an obliteration. Especially from the beginning in game three, with those guys hitting some big shots, big threes. And of course, Bam did his thing. Jimmy only had about 16 points in that game. He wasn't needed to be, they didn't need him to be Jimmy Butler in that situation because everybody else was chipped in. They essentially did it by community, rather committee. And I think that we will see something like that tonight. Not necessarily a 28, 30 point blowout. I think it will be closer. Can't get any worse if you're the Celtics, but I do think the Heat will find a way to close this out because they're not going to want to take the risk of going back to Boston when who knows, possibly knock on wood, an injury can occur in their team tonight. We've seen Kevin Love leave the game. Well, it looked like I thought apparently at first I thought it was a back injury, but I think it was an ankle injury in which he left the game. I believe it was in the second, third quarter, or halfway to the third quarter, and he didn't come back in the game. But I think it was the second quarter. But anyways, he didn't come back into the game, so I don't know what. I'm not really clear on what his status is for the game tonight. I didn't see any reports on that yet. But look what happened there. So do they want to risk that and take the chance of having to go back to Boston? Let's say if another player tweaks his ankle. We've seen that happen to Jimmy Butler last series in game one. He was able to come back and play throughout the series after missing a game. But I think that they are hungry. They're focused, and they are going to do their best to close out the series tonight and advance to their second final in the last 4 years, in which we will see a Denver Nuggets Miami Heat NBA Finals. As for Boston, like I mentioned, this is really alarming, and we even seen some people point that out as well in the broadcast, the TNT broadcast. Charles Barkley called them out for their lackluster effort. We even seen post game Magic Johnson take to Twitter and just explain that he's never seen a Boston team essentially quit in his time of watching this team, the same team that is arguably the most historic franchise in NBA history, along with the Los Angeles Lakers. So he expressed his concerns about them in that matter. Again, I mentioned that two star players just look like unrecognizable, essentially, in game three. They really look like they didn't want to be there, which is can't be good. For Boston, I think that this series, regardless if it ends tonight or in Boston, if somehow it gets to a game five, which I think it will go past game five, I think that there will be some changes made to this team when the series is over and they get eliminated. Because I don't think that you can really run it back and expect a different result. I know this team has been knocking on the door for several years, been to several conference finals and NBA finals last year, came within 2 games of winning the NBA finals last year. But this is really a big step back. We know that what they were getting in the what they were getting themselves into when they elected to make Joe Mazzulla the interim coach, and then also and then put him as the permanent coach around the All-Star break, well, prior to the All-Star break, I should say, when they elected to make them the full-time coach. Remember, he did get hired virtually with about 2 to 3 weeks before training camp, I want to say, when the scandal involving Ime Udoka broke, for which he had conduct that was detrimental to the team, according to the policies. And I want to we don't no need to get into that, into what happened. Oh, that's what was reported, but that kind of came out of nowhere, and then so they had to like really like move fast and work on the fly, and then they elected to put Mazzulla in that interim role. And remember, Will Hardy, who was very valuable to that coaching staff under Udoka, had already went to Utah. So next up was Mazzulla, and here we are now. And a lot of people did question Mazzulla, if he can replicate what Joe Mazzulla, not Joe Mazzulla, Ime Udoka was able to do last year in terms of necessary, in terms of getting the most out of his team, because what Udoka did last season was remarkable. That team was did a complete 180 after the new year, and just went on a great run. And it got to the NBA final because they were really struggling throughout the year. Early on in the year, from October to late December, they turned it around. He was hard nosed. He had held everybody accountable, gun in their face when he felt it was necessary. Didn't let anyone off the hook. Held the best player to essentially the worst player on the roster. Held them accountable in the same manner. So a lot of people wondered, would Joe Mazzulla do that? Would the players buy in to him? And it looks like right now, as we're seeing 3 games into the NBA, these Eastern Conference Finals, that is not the case. And it's even reports now that players are still upset about how the Ime Udoka situation was handled, or rather, the fact that he is gone now, and now Mazzulla is their coach, because a lot of them, Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart, spoke in the past, have spoken highly of Udoka and how much they revered him as their head coach. And so I can imagine now that he's gone, and they weren't necessarily don't really have information as to why, or much information as to why he's gone. And of course, Celtics can't really speak on that matter. But you can see how there's some tension there. So that is an issue that's going on. And also too, we're seeing potential issues going on. Well, not the issues, I would say, but there's a lot of people in the media who are speaking as to whether or not the Boston Celtics should keep Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, keep this duo together long term. As you know, as a result of Jaylen Brown making second team All NBA, he's eligible for the Supermax. And I believe Tatum won't be able to sign Supermax until the 2024-25 season, or prior to the 2024-25 season. So they are gonna, if they elect to keep those duo together, that will be over $600 million invested in those two for the long term. And question is, for a lot of people, is that realistic? Can you win with those two being your best players? As their skill sets are essentially redundant, they don't really complement each other like some duos across the league, such as Jokic and Murray, AD and LeBron. Those guys are like, they have different positions, so they complement each other. Whereas JB and JT, it's essentially they just redundant, and it's just like my turn, your turn, hero type basketball, isolation, dribbling, and trying to score. So that's something that we can that there is a concern about. And then also too, Jaylen Brown, is he really happy in Boston? We've seen throughout the last few months, he's kind of given some mixed signals about his experience in Boston with the Celtics. I can't really necessarily say I blame him, especially since he's been in trade talks a lot ever since the NBA Finals last year, most notably with for Kevin Durant. I'm not saying that he is on the level of Kevin Durant. He is not. KD is one of the top 15 players to ever play the game of basketball. But at the same time, Jaylen Brown has done a lot for the Celtics. You can argue that, no, I don't think you can argue. He definitely was the best player for them in the finals last season. So from his standpoint, he's looking at that as, why is my name constantly being brought up in trade talks when I'm contributing just as much as Tatum is, and I've had been at some at some in some cases been better than him. I always said that I think that Jaylen Brown has. I love Jaylen Brown's motor. I love his aggression more than I like Tatum's. But at the same time, I think Tatum has a higher upside, so that may be what why the Celtics tend to favor Tatum more, as he has been deemed virtually untouchable. You don't see him mentioned in any trade talks, so I can see why how that can annoy Jaylen Brown. So, will he commit to this team long term? Who knows? Will the Celtics try to move on from him and then try to go in a different direction? We don't know that as well. Only time will tell. But this isn't going to be a this this next game or possibly the next two games is going to be a big could be a big turning point in the Celtics' franchise history. As their last championship came in 2008, and they have only won one in the last 37 years. This is going to be a big moment. Being in Boston, title town, there's expectations that comes with being. Part of this organization, so they won't be satisfied at all, and they will probably look to make some big changes. But again, it doesn't take away from the greatness that has been on display from the Miami Heat, essentially this entire playoff run. Being a number 8 seed, losing the initial play-in game, and then winning the second to get into the playoffs, and then knocking off the number 1 seed in the Milwaukee Bucks to defeating the Knicks in six, and then potentially on the verge of sweeping the Boston Celtics. A lot of people didn't see this coming. I don't think any analyst did, but that just goes to show you just how great of an infrastructure there is down in Miami, and the player development and the commitment from the players, the what's demanded of them as well too by the coaching staff. They hold them to a high standard, expect the best out of them, and as a result, they're on the verge rather of appearing in another NBA Finals. And I just think that's a great story for the NBA. This is one of the most interesting seasons that we've had in recent years that I can remember. A lot of parity this past season, because who in their right mind would have thought coming into this season that it would be possible for a Miami Heat, Denver Nuggets, NBA Finals. I don't think anybody put that bet in Vegas. I'd be shocked. Maybe somebody did. I don't know. But most people never thought that this would happen. But here we are. And it's just a matter of time, I think, as to when the Miami Heat will clinch their ticket and then we'll be ready for game one of the NBA Finals next Thursday. Which kind of sucks now that we're going to have all this downtime, because I this will be the first time if the Heat pull it off that there's ever been a sweep in a conference finals in both the East and Western Conference finals in the same year. It's never happened before. And of course, Denver advanced last night to the first NBA finals in franchise history after knocking off the Lakers. So now it's the Heat's turn to see if they can do the same. And I would think that they'd want to just get this series over with to, essentially have the same rest time as the Denver Nuggets, and you just get ready for that atmosphere down in Denver, as Denver's going to have home court advantage if the Heat do advance to the NBA final. Denver will have home court advantage, so that'll probably allow them to get to Denver earlier just to get used to the altitude out there in the Mile High City, which is a real thing. So I think that they want to take advantage and just get this series over as soon as possible. But I think that's going to be a great series, which if it is going to be the Denver Nuggets and the Miami Heat going head to head, I know that's not going to have the big box office draw. Ratings will probably be the worst. I wouldn't be surprised at that, because that's the worst ratings for an NBA Finals in history. Wouldn't shock me at all. But I think if you are a true fan of basketball, you will definitely appreciate this finals. You're going to love the matchups that we're going to see, the great coaching on both sides between Mike Malone, Eric Spoelstra, exceptional offensive sets, great defense on the Heat side, great passing big men between Bam and Joker, who I think is the greatest passing big of all time. And you have the toughness of Jimmy Butler, the clutch shot making, and then that's the Jamal Murray on a tear, looking to to having a great comeback story after suffering a devastating ACL injury that's kept them out of the last two playoffs runs for the Nuggets. Just so many great storylines, I think. So I would definitely look forward to that finals. And I think it's going to be established and set in stone after tonight. So we will see. All right, so I'm going to come right back and talk a little bit about Carmelo Anthony, who announced his retirement. All right, so salute to Carmelo Anthony, who officially announced his retirement earlier today on IG. After 19 seasons, he's calling it quits. What a great basketball career overall. It's funny because some of my people be asked to be acting like Melo isn't going to be in the Hall of Fame. They said that he's not a Hall of Fame. He should have get in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, are you crazy? He definitely should get in the Hall of Fame because, first of all, it's not the NBA Hall of Fame. It is the Basketball Hall of Fame. So, with that being said, they obviously do take your collegiate career into consideration as well as your Olympic career, accompanied with the NBA career. So with all that being said, I mean, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. He was the most he's the most outstanding player in 03, in which Syracuse won the chip. He has 3 gold medals and is the all-time leading scorer in Olympic history. So he's definitely going to Hall of Fame. I mean, honestly, you can put the collegiate and the Olympic career aside. Off the NBA alone, he is really gonna first ballot Hall of Famer, 10-time All-Star, 2-time All-NBA second team, 4-time All-NBA third team, scoring champ in 2013, named to the 75th anniversary team as well. And also, he has over 28,000 points scored in his career, 9th all-time in scoring. And basically, everybody who was in the 20K club and up for scoring in league history, they're a Hall of Famer. So he is definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. One of the best scorers of my generation, triple threat, score on the block, mid-range, from 3. He was just hella fun to watch, and essentially it was a nightmare for a lot of oppositions. I remember Kobe, one of my favorites of all time, of course. RIP to the Mamba. Didn't mention that. I believe he said that he was like either the hardest player he had to guard in the league, or definitely one. He was up there certainly, talking about Carmelo Anthony, giving him praise. And I love their battle that they had back in the Western Conference Finals back in 09. That was, I think, Carmelo's best season in the NBA. Some people will argue 2013 with the Knicks when he won the scoring title that year, and they got bounced in the semis to the Pacers. That was one hell of a year by Melo as well. But for me personally, I gotta go with the 09. 08-09 season and then run to the Western Conference Finals, because that was fresh off the Olympic run they had, the Redeem Team, in which the likes of him, LeBron Wade, they decided, seeing Kobe and Jason Kidd's worth ethic, their leadership, seeing that on full display up close and personal, really likes motivated them to be essentially better players. And those guys, the following season, had the best season of their career up to that point, and especially Melo. I just loved his demeanor. I remember in the series, game one of the Western Conference Finals, at a point in the game, he wanted to take on the responsibility of defending Kobe. I just love that. That's how it should be. The best players on the best players on the best team should guard each other at some point in the series, instead of ducking one another. Just take the responsibility on and just and see what happens. And I love that, man. So. It's good to see Melo, come at peace with his basketball mortality. He should have, but possibly would be, well, he definitely would have be higher up in the all-time scoring list if he didn't get blackballed for those years that he did in the last couple of years in his career, where we said where it was kind of like just shunned out of the NBA. And I know the game had changed. It was going heavy off analytics. But at the same time, Melo should have been on the roster. It just felt like he was being blackballed, probably because he didn't want to come off the bench, where he said that he would like he couldn't like see himself doing that, essentially. I'm paraphrasing, I believe, in a press conference. But at the same time, I'm not going to knock him. He's probably been the best player on his team virtually his entire life, right? You're talking about a guy who's elite on at the offensive level. So for him to, be demoted or take a bench role, which would sound crazy to him, because hey, We if we know what the, what is good, and we think what is good, anything that we do in life, to be like delegated to a certain like role, it's gonna be hard to accept. And I think that's what happened with Melo. But I'm happy that he did get a chance to come back in the league and be a vital part of the Blazers when he was in the Blazers. He was pretty good for them the time there as well. And he did some things for the Lakers as well too when he was there. So again, salute to Carmelo on a successful NBA career, and wish him the best in his next phase of his life. And that is it for this episode. Thank you guys for your continued support. And if you're new to this pod, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and also hope that you'll stick around for the journey. If you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button, as this pod is available just about wherever you listen to your favorite podcast set. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more platforms, of course. Feel free to follow me as well on social media if you like, Instagram and Twitter at Mr. Vincent 13. And you can also like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. So I am looking to put an episode out, I would say Friday, if not early Saturday morning. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, enjoy the game for tonight, and take care. We'll touch base soon.